This is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Stargirl fans, welcome back to another post-season episode of Stargirl After Show. Sponsored, as always, by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week, we are talking to the Britishest British man with the beardiest beard, Mark Ashworth, our favorite janitor.
Yes. Oh, he's wonderful.
I can't think of the right adjective, but he's just so pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems very down to earth, very nice, very, I don't know, like relatable, like someone you'd want to hang out with.
Yeah. And my God, what an actor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he really, really kills it on this show. And the difficulty with doing these interviews was that I did all the interviews before I had seen more than the pilot. The pilot was all I had seen when I did these interviews. And I had not seen, for example, Mark Ashworth do more than sweep outside the school and glare at Courtney a little bit.
Oh, really?
That's so I didn't have the ammo to like really talk about how amazing he was in this role.
Oh, yeah.
All I had was like all the rest of the cast just going on and on all the time about how amazing he was.
But yeah, and how great the character is, how Jake said last week that he wanted to, if he couldn't have been Henry Jr., that he wanted to be the Shining Knight.
Yeah. So like literally, as they would talk about him on the set, I was like, why don't I know this guy's name? Because they made it sound like I the way they talked about him, I thought that I was going to look him up and find that he'd won like 3 Oscars and was like some huge, well-known, like Gary Oldman level actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he's done over 100 projects.
Yeah.
I think we discussed in the interview how he's almost as prolific as Michael Caine in like a quarter of the time.
Yeah.
But they were just blown away by his talent. And my God, let's get this guy some recognition and some real big roles.
Yes.
And then some statues.
Well, yeah. Now I want to go and see the other movies that he's been in. I want to try and catch him in Logan. What was the other? Magnificent Seven? Yeah, I want to see him in other things.
Yeah, I want to have him give me a list of his meatiest roles. You know, the most significant stuff.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to sit through a 2-hour movie and go, ah, that bartender was awesome with that one line he had.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Mark flexing. So, yeah. I'm going to have to go back and do that through that massive, massive catalog of projects that he's worked on.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully he's going to make an appearance in season 2. Maybe you'll be able to ask him in person.
There's no reason for him not to.
Mm-hmm.
He can fly in on Winged Victory once he finds it.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I would love to see that.
It would be, man, that would be a really great, like, just everything seems terrible. What's going to happen? They're all going to die. And then shwang, Shining Knight flies in on a Pegasus and saves the day.
Beautiful.
Out of the blue.
I'm going to be disappointed if it doesn't happen now.
and then just end an episode on a shot, like looking up at him from ground level astride his horse.
Yes.
Oh, I got shivers.
Yeah, 100% on board with this.
All right, let's take a quick break and come back and listen to this awesome interview with this awesome person.
All right.
The interview, by the way, is awesome because of him. It's not like I was doing a super great job. I mean, that Mark is awesome.
Stargirl After Show. Stargirl After Show.
So I'm very happy to be talking with Mark Ashworth today, who you now know is the Shining Knight on Stargirl. Hi, Mark. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean. Thrilled to be here.
So you are sort of the biggest surprise in the season. No one saw Shining Knight coming. So you've got like this almost unexpectedly huge role. And your own episode named after you. Did you expect that when you were cast?
Not at all. No, not even in the slightest. Never in my wildest dreams. I told Jeff that too. When I came on board the show, when I auditioned, it was guest star, recurring or even possibly recurring, and I was the janitor. And I had no idea. And going through the season too, as everything unfolded, you know, they don't send you the whole season as a block. You're getting these scripts because they're constantly writing and rewriting. You're getting these scripts as you get to them. So a couple of weeks before you are supposed to roll cameras, the actors are sent out the scripts, unless I'm sure the season regulars get theirs a little bit further in advance. As it went along, I was the janitor, and you know, Jeff, when we worked on the pilot, he came out and introduced himself a little bit to me, and he gave me a lot of good backstory as to the character of Justin and who exactly he was and what he meant to Jeff personally. And he started giving me the history, and I was just kind of nodding my head, and I was like, "Oh, that's amazing! That's so cool." I'm not too familiar with the storyline of Stargirl and Sir Justin, in fact. And I was nodding my head, and I just, you know, I had no idea that pieces of that were going to be drawn out throughout the show. So yeah, by the time we got to 111, he had said that things were going to start getting a little bit more prevalent for me. I would have a little bit more meat and potatoes, I call it. Coming down to episode 11. But as you remember in episode 7, I help Stargirl, I help Courtney when she's having that showdown with Shiv. And so when that happened, I was like, oh boy, this is getting really good. And it was kind of a little taste of where we to go. But I had no idea, Sean, that my character would change and become who he has at this point. Yeah, a dream, absolute dream. You know, you only ever hope. And as an actor, you sometimes get an episode or two, and you know, I'm grateful for any and every bit of work that I'm able to get. And usually when you get a role on a TV show, at least if you don't die, there's always that little bit of hope. Oh, I could come back. I'm not dead. I could come back, you know. And so for it to have blown up and turned out the way that it did, I'm so grateful. Yeah.
Now, talking about getting whatever work can come your way, looking over your resume here, it appears that you've been acting in TV and film for about 12 years.
That's right.
But you have 115 credits, Mark.
Yeah, I know. I tell my agent, I'm the white Samuel Jackson. Put me in, coach. You know, I think it's important to do the work, and it might be to a fault sometimes with me. But I don't think it is. I say that. There are some projects that fall flat. There are some projects that don't turn out as well as you would hope. But I think in every different circumstance, every opportunity that you get, there is lessons to learn and things that you can take from that and thus become better. Even if you fall flat on your face, then there's a lesson to be learned there. So yeah, I'm grateful for all these opportunities that I've had.
You know, just as a point of reference, one of the hardest working actors in history is Michael Caine.
Yes.
I mean, the guy will be in anything. He was in Jaws 4.
Was he really? I didn't even know there was a Jaws 4.
Oh, yeah. It's real bad. But he's been acting consistently since 1956, and he has 176 credits. Wow. You're going to lap him in like a year or two.
Yes. That's my new goal there, Sean. You've set me up a goal in the next few years. I'm going after Michael Caine.
So,
a lot of people know that.
You are sort of one of those ever-present character actors, right?
I like to think I'm a character actor, Sean. I do. And, you know, sometimes that could be a blessing and a curse. You know, because there's a lot of friends that I know that have specific types, and they tend to work a lot. And sure, I try and, you know, get myself out and work as much as I can. If it's not through agency stuff, then indie stuff, you know, that's where I tend to learn the most in actual fact. I think being a character actor, it's harder to get out consistently and be pinned down for a type. They say if you can figure your type, and you know, your agent knows your type, you get your headshots for your type, then obviously you get more auditions for said type. And so my auditions tend to be kind of all over the place, you know. And I don't know, I hate, it's not, it doesn't sound like I'm not complaining, I hope it doesn't come across like that, but I enjoy the challenges of the different roles that I have the opportunity to do. You know, I try not, when I'm auditioning, sometimes I'll see if I can send a couple of takes. One, obviously in my native tongue or close to it, depending on the character or the class of the character. And then I'll send one to American, you know, I try and not, try not to limit the role based on my initial idea of it, you know.
You don't want to always be a villain or a butler.
No, exactly. Yeah. You know, I think sometimes I get brought in as a wild card, you know, because I do have a little bit of diversity that maybe not so many people here in Atlanta have.
Now, as an English actor, do you have a background on stage?
I do not, no. I do not. Stage stuff is stuff that I really haven't been trained in. I have been on stage a few different times here in Atlanta. I'm actually on the board of the Renaissance Project Theatre. My friend Michael Cole is the director of that, and yeah, I've had the opportunity to get on stage a few times. I do it thoroughly enjoy it. It's so fulfilling. It's you know, you get the opportunity to go to work when you're in the rehearsal, work the same scenes, and you know, depending on the role, you pepper through the script, and you have the opportunity to develop character, and you don't ever stop in that. You know, as an actor, you try and find the moments as they come, and with stage, I find it's the perfect breeding ground for just being open and being able to be changed by other people, by yourself, you know, by your movements, by not saying a really important line one night that you're not even facing the person that you're directing it to. Those different kind of things you have the opportunity to develop when you're constantly in script, in the same script over and over, something that you're not really afforded with film and television, not too often anyway. usually on film and TV, TV especially, it's a breakneck speed. You get maybe two, three max if you're three takes. If the director or the showrunner, whoever it is still looking for something a little different, or they want to try something, then that's on them. But if they've got what they needed after the second take, then you're pretty much going to be moving on. You know, I love the intensity of theater and the opportunity to really dig in.
So when we're looking at your IMDb, for example, is that pretty much your start in acting back in 2008?
It is. Yeah, it is. I got started here in Atlanta. It was a friend of a friend who we were at my mate's birthday party. And his girlfriend told me, we were just all chatting, she said that she was going to be going to some acting classes just down the road from where we were. And it kind of surprised me. I wasn't aware that there were any schools in Atlanta that taught. And I asked a little bit further about it. And then she disclosed that, you know, it was a month-to-month basis, which really surprised me. I was always under the impression to be an actor, you had to go to dramatic fine art school. And with that, obviously, there's a hefty tuition cost that would come with it. And it was just something that was never financially within my capability. And so I, you know, I just kind of pricked my ears up. I said, I would really, really like to come. And she said, come with me. And so we went, and I just kind of went and got embarrassed and just fell flat, and some strange reason just kept on going back. You know, it was there was so much to it, and there still is so much to it. I'm still learning about myself. I still feel like I'm just kind of you know, still underneath the tip of the iceberg as far as what it is and how it works. And there's so much to learn from the business element, which is something that they taught at that school, industry standard things, the craft itself, the different techniques, which there never is one that works. There's certain things that you pick from that enable you to work better. But I don't think there's any one that is the litmus for everything. And then, you know, also just on camera work, which is very, very important too as actors, especially now in the self-tape age that we find ourselves in. You know, just the different eye lines and, you know, movements and how big your frame are, all that kind of stuff is really important. And, you know, I just find that I'm still challenged so much by the whole craft of it all.
So was acting something that you were interested in prior to this, but just thought you didn't have an entry to?
Yes and no. I think I was interested in the fact that I love to get sucked into movies. You know, from an early age, I think movies resonate with so many people, and we love to connect and to cry and to be happy for people. And as a kid, I remember, I think it was probably Goonies that was the first film. I was like, I want to be going down that slide into that pool and getting some treasure. I think I could do that. I was only young at the time, and that kind of planted a seed, although it, up until that point it fell on concrete. It wasn't in soil and it wasn't being watered. It was just something that was there. And I guess it was when I met my friend Daniel's girlfriend Charlie that it really ignited it. I was like, hang on a minute. I had stopped playing football as well. I used to play a little football, and I'd gotten injured, and I really couldn't play anymore and be any good. And that was an outlet for me that I just didn't have anymore. So I was looking for something else to get into. So it was just one of those things, you know. I think acting too is, you know, you're never too old to do it. You're never too young to start. It's one of those things that you just kind of fall into. It's a journey. No matter who is doing it, there's so many different ways to travel when you're talking about acting too. It's, you know, but travel is a must. And so, yeah, there's different clues peppered along my life throughout my childhood, and then different things that have happened that opened up the course, you know, getting the injury and then just looking to get something to get into, paired with going there to that party that night and finding out that these things were happening here in Atlanta and they were affordable. And, you know, I was in a position to be able to go and take those classes. You know, whenever you're young, you can be so hungry to be acting, but you know, life is peppered with stripes that you get, that you bring as an actor. And so, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't have it any other way. I think it's important to attain life stripes and be able to bring those. It's good to be seasoned, you know. So, yeah, I got started when I was just about 30, maybe just a little bit before 30.
And looking at the rest of the cast, obviously it's a lot of young actors, so they got started much earlier than 30.
Yeah.
And even the older people, like Luke and Amy, they were started when they were in their early 20s.
Yeah.
So for you to... I mean, you've pretty much lapped, I think, everybody on the show in terms of like just how many roles you've had, and to have gotten started relatively late in life for an actor. That's very impressive.
Thank you.
You must be a very, very hardworking actor. And in fact, you've worked on shows that I worked on.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was on Sleepy Hollow when you were on it.
Excellent. Ah, that was amazing. I had such a good time on that show.
That was one of my favorite shows to work on. Not the best show in general, but
right.
You know, from I work in the art department, so from an art department perspective, like, you don't get much better than that. Coming back to Stargirl, can you tell me a bit about the audition process that you went through there?
Sure. So I had gotten a notification from my agent, which is how it usually happens, you know, for me. Only a couple of jobs have I ever gotten an offer from, but I got a notification for an audition for a new show. And I think it was called Stargirl. Sometimes they put aliases of shows, but I read the role was that of, it wasn't Justin at the time. I forget the character's name. It might have been a little bit Irish sounding, but I got the sides, and it was a scene where I don't think it was actually ever used, but it was a hallway scene, and I was mopping, and it seems like somebody I had assumed, after looking at who was attached at that point, which is what you do when you get your audition, you kind of thumb through the project, see who's attached at that point, see who's casting, see who's the showrunner, see who's directing, and things like that. There are different kind of clues that you can get when you're auditioning. And I'd assumed that the scene was with the lead, one of the leads, Luke Wilson. And so I was basically mopping. I get interrupted by him, and then I talk about our history together in a war. And it was a great scene. I go from just being somebody that was, you know, in the middle of doing a job to being interrupted, and then remembering something that had been lost by the person that approaches me, and then it kind of all goes away again at the very end. So it had a beautiful, whoever wrote that particular scene, it had a beautiful character arch. And sometimes you get those, sometimes you have to work a little bit harder, but this particular scene, I think it was only a two-page scene, had a nice little her character arch. So I went over to my friend Chris's, and we put it on tape. It was, like I said earlier, it was a I think it was a guest star, a recurring at that point, which we don't know. That could be two episodes, you know. If more than one is recurring. And I put it on tape and didn't hear anything back for another month and a half. And I remember I was getting my taxes done that day, and I got a call from the agent, and they talked to me, and they said, we've got an offer for the Stargirl project. I was over the moon. I was like, yes, this is amazing news. The bad news is, they said, it coincides with the movie that you had just booked that was shooting in Alabama. It was a very, very gritty feature by this American novelist that was being brought to the screen. The Devil All the Time, I think it was called. It was a very, very character-driven piece. It was Tom Holland was in it, and Bill Skarsgård, and Robert Pattinson, Maya Wasikowski, and I was playing this moonshiner. I've had a few of those in my time. It might be the beard. I feel like I could do a pretty good Appalachian accent too, but I got the offer. They said the difficult part is the first 2 days, the only 2 days that you're shooting on the pilot, coincide with the last 2 days of your booked movie. And that was a 10-day shoot in Alabama. I was like, okay. And I didn't know what that meant at first. I was just overjoyed, and I was kind of hoping I didn't know what it meant, which was that I was going to have to say goodbye to one of them. And, you know, I thought about it, and my agent got back and he said there was no wiggle room on the feature. And, you know, it was at that point that I do a vision board that I have, and a goal, something that I put all my goals down on, and motivation and things like that. And on that vision board, for the past, I don't know, 4 years, I had been kind of channeling and focusing and putting my energy, my physical energy, into recurring TV. And, you know, like I said earlier, it was a difficult decision to make, because I didn't know how many episodes this was going to be. At this point, it was recurring. I was a janitor. Like I say, it could have been two, you know. And so, but at the same time, I had put that on my vision board that I was going to be channeling recurring roles on television. So at the end of the day, I looked at that. I spoke to my agent, to my mentor, Michael Cole, and we talked it over, and I paid homage to my goals and went with my heart and my gut, and that was Stargirl. And so we had to let the other one go, which was very unfortunate, but at the same time, it was they still had a month and a half before shooting. The shooting had been pushed back. It was supposed to shoot, I think, in February, and then it pushed back to May, wherever it was that Stargirl started. And so I bowed out of it, but you know, just having that as a guide that really helped me through which decision to make there was just a real blessing. You know, whenever you can, lean on your goals and they'll carry you through.
So it sounds like it would have been a pretty big movie, or will be a pretty big movie with that cast.
Yeah.
But you've done big movies already. You were in Black Panther. You were in, what's the other one?
Magnificent Seven.
Logan.
Yeah, I was in Logan too. I mean, blink and you miss me on that one. But yeah, I did. I got to work with Hugh Jackman on that, who was amazing. What an absolute star. They ended up cutting the lines because they really didn't need them. It, you know, it, the first scene in that movie where he wakes up in the limo was all you needed to know about him as his character. You know, run down, ragged, struggling mentally, physically with alcohol. And, you know, the scene that I had, I was a bartender. And, yeah, just a bit of fluff scene, which happens quite a lot. But to have that opportunity to work with him and to get to experience how nice, how generous, how giving he is, how connected he is, how much like a human should be in my eyes. You know, it doesn't cost anything, and it, you know, it was amazing. It's the last Friday of the week, and the last scene of the week, the last setup. So we got started, I think, at 2 a.m. as things go through the week, they push back. You know, they did his coverage, and then they were flipping the camera around, and he comes over to me and he said, "Mark," he remembered my name, which was amazing. And he said, "Mark, I'm going to step off if you don't mind." He said, "My eyes, I'm having a little trouble with my eyes. And so I'm going to go get them, you know, hydrated." And I looked at him, I was like, "Okay, yeah, that's fine. Thank you. Thank you for asking." I mean, they're so kind and giving, and I don't know, it just, you know, it just really blew me away when he said that. He showed up that day, that morning on Friday, with lottery tickets for everyone. He was passing them out on set. But that was a great opportunity. So yeah.
You know, I just heard an interview with Allison Janney where she was saying that he did that. Came in with the lottery tickets.
Yeah, what an amazing thing to do. You know, the possibility of that is like, you know, it could be $1 million he's giving you. Nobody knows, and it's like, you know, it's I don't know. It's just a cool thing to do. I have a little scratch off here and there, but nothing too much. But I think that's so cool.
Yeah, it's great when someone that's like that huge a star takes the extra effort to be nice to the cast and the other members of the crew and stuff.
Yeah, those things go far. You know, just doing things like that, it goes a long way.
But so I'm sure that played a part in your choosing to go with Stargirl over the movie, because you'd already done the big movies and you were trying to get into recurring TV.
That's right, exactly. Definitely.
So it's more about something new than like the paycheck.
Yeah, it was about something new to me. You know, as an actor, you try, I think, and carve out a career. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have the opportunity on the bigger ones, you know, to get to work more than a day. But a lot of the times at my level specifically, you know, you get 1 or 2 days. Bigger roles, the blessings, you get a week on set, and that is an amazing opportunity. And, you know, those roles, they tend to have a little bit more gravitas to them. And so, you know, I think my idea behind setting a goal of recurring television was you can get on a show and you can have even just a small part, and it can go so much further depending on the show. If the show is a hit, you know, your character could be brought back in, you know, and it, if the show's a hit and it goes another season, maybe you can live long enough to be brought back again. And so, you know, not only financially is it a beautiful thing, but more than that, there's people that can associate you and your work with projects. And so I think it for longevity of an actor, I think it plays out in so many different ways in your benefit to get on reoccurring. You know, I aspire. Yeah. My new goal is season regular on there. That's on my vision board now. You know, you got to keep striving and keep reaching.
I've always said that life is really just a race against yourself.
Yeah, that's perfect. It is, and it should be, because then you don't ever stop, right?
Yeah, you don't want to look at other people and pit yourself against them. You just have to look at you yesterday and do better than that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That reminds me of that Matthew McConaughey speech at the Oscars. Remember when he said, who's your hero? He said, me in 5 years from now. And then five years later, down the line, when he came back, he said, who's your hero? Now you're there. He says, who's your hero now? He's like, me 5 years from now. and that definitely resonates with what you're saying there. And I'm a believer in that. Yeah, we are fighting ourselves. And, you know, being an actor, it can be so hard because, you know, there are times when the phone's not ringing, the auditions aren't coming in, and the work isn't there. And that is kind of normal for everybody. I think everybody goes through that, no matter who you are. I think there are times that you're hot. Sure, you can go like, I mean, some of these A-list actors go 3 or 4 years on top. But then there comes a time too where things simmer down for one reason or another. The publics change. The wants and needs of television changes, you know. And so, you know, you look at resurging actors like Jason Bateman. Jason Bateman, he was amazing, and then he kind of until Arrested Development, was it, that he got back into it again then. But through the 90s, I think he was quiet for the most. I'm sure he was doing a lot of stuff, but
that's a great example of a great second act.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh man, and he's high flying and he's great. You know, with the way that film and television are going now, with Netflix buying and acquiring and different streaming platforms buying and creating their own content, it's just, you know, you've seen a lot of those A-list actors coming into TV because the content is just so good. It's so good. And you look at Luke on Stargirl and the different other actors that are attached to it, Joel McHale, you know, this is kind of like a perfect mesh together of that too. I think we're seeing that too, and you know, hopefully it will cross genres and age and all different kind of good stuff on the show.
So I want to go back to something you said about your agent letting you know that you had the offer.
Yeah.
What was that, after your first audition?
Yes, it was. I put my tape on and I booked straight from tape.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Listeners may not understand the process, but there's typically you send in the audition tape and then maybe they'll call you in for an in-person audition and then you get a call back and then a screen test and then you get the offer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they do a lot of screen tests for the season regulars. That's not something that I've had to do yet, a screen test, but I'm sure that is mostly for the season regulars because they'll bring specific cast members in and they'll have them just check chemistry, I think, mostly what it is, and just see how things look.
Well, I think if you were actually going for the sort of role that you thought you were going for, what happened might seem normal, but knowing Geoff Johns, he knew where your character was going.
Yes.
So I think that it is very impressive that you got the offer on the one audition.
I was absolutely thrilled. You know, we were working on episode 11, and you know that scene where we're in the garage, and you've read the script, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The scene where we're in the garage, and I basically break down having confronted Stripes, and I'm kind of piecing together certain things, and I was I forget his name, the Philip, the one of the writers on the show, he was there, and he said, you know, we looked at the character, and there was either you, there was another actor, I think he was out of LA, he said, we felt like The other guy looked more of a knight. He looked like more of a knight. Wood, you know, chiseled, probably chiseled face. He said, but you, we kind of realized, especially when we looked at your reel on IMDb, that you would be able to bring a level of vulnerability to the character, which is what the character needed. And yeah, I was so grateful to hear that, and just so grateful to be there and to have had that opportunity to work. When I got that script, I was just like, I was gobsmacked. Not only is the episode nailed after my character, which is massive, but to have that opportunity to have that scene with Cameron, Angelica, and Luke, and to be in that big sword fight, it was just a wonderful day of shooting. There are days like that when you're working that you just, you know, all the work, all the hustle, all the scramble, all the heartache, all the headache, all the blood, sweat, and tears, everything just kind of meets, and it just lets you know that you're on the right path, and you feel like you're part of something. And I was so grateful, Jennifer. She was amazing directing the episode. She really was, and she was
Jennifer Fang.
Yeah, she pulled certain things out that were beautiful. You know, she the direction that she would give to me was just, from an actor's point of view, it's great. She came to me on just one specific. She said, "Find a moment to look at Pat. Find a moment." And rather than saying, "I want you to look at him here," or "you need to connect this, she allowed me as an actor to marinate that and to do that myself. She was respecting the craft of what the actor does, and she was able to do that. The scene where we're in the garage, when we go to the back of the garage and we're kind of piecing things together as to where my horse win victory is. She was able to just paint pictures in my head without giving me any specific direction or stealing the craft, kind of a thing, you know. We as actors, you want to kind of protect the craft. When a director, otherwise it's like you're playing a sock puppet, and in which case it would come across like that. You know, but when a director gives you that piece of direction, those little golden nuggets that paint a picture inside your head that you can then gesticulate, it really is its weight in gold. It is, and I was so grateful, you know, to all the work that I've done on the indies and working with directors and fighting for character and talking. It comes out in moments like this, you know, where I do have the opportunity to be directed and to give my own thoughts on the character in these particular moments. You know, sometimes when you get a day or two on set, but we are inevitably, no matter what role we're doing, just a slab of meat, but sometimes we get the opportunity to be a talking slab of meat and one that has a perspective, and those are I'm so grateful for those opportunities when they come along.
So this incarnation of Justin is clearly very heavily based on Don Quixote, like a modern day Don Quixote.
Exactly right.
Yes. Did you do any prep? Did you read The Man from La Mancha or anything like that?
I give it the old college try, Sean. I give it the old college try. That one is that is a beast.
It's very dense, yes.
It's an absolute beast. Yeah, I did. I tried, and I mean, I probably got to the windmills. it was a hard one for me to follow, and sometimes if I'm not invested in a book, I tend to move on. you know, and for some reason I wasn't able to attach myself. I did do what research I could. I looked up a fantastic movie that I could watch. It was a little bit easier to digest. But yeah, Jeff had come to me that first pilot episode and he said, Don Quixote is kind of your spirit animal. He is, you know, he's kind of where I see Justin Arthur when I'm seeing his brain. If his brain was splayed out, that's kind of how he would feel about himself and how he processes the world around him. You know, somewhat is he for real? Is he post-traumatic stress disorder? Is there a little bit of amnesia here? Just a little bit of uncertain footing in that regard, and that was great nugget moving forward from that. That was the day that I was just kind of nodding as he was talking to me. I was like, this is cool. I don't know if it's going to play out in script, but this is really cool.
Yeah, I just got cast as a janitor, and you're telling me I'm Don Quixote?
What? Yeah. I was like, well, that's cool. That he's got. That's amazing. He is very, very thorough. Here I am mopping the floors and picking up a piece of broken glass in the pilot episode in the background, and I've got all that going on in my brain. It's like, man, this is ace. This is ace. I don't know what's going to come of it, and I'm loving every minute of it.
And this is what I meant when I said that Jeff knew where your character was going. Your character is revealed in full in episode 11.
Yes.
And before we began filming, we had a meeting and we were discussing the pilot and Courtney's belief that Starman is her father.
Yeah.
So also in episode 11, it's revealed Starman is not her father. We meet her actual father.
Oh, yeah.
And in that meeting, prior to shooting the pilot, Jeff said, now Stargirl's not her father. We're going to meet him in episode 11. So being working in TV on entire series, you see so often that these shows seem to barely know what's happening in the next episode, in the next scene, let alone the next episode. So for Jeff to have that planned out all the way and know when that was dropping in episode 11,
yeah.
I know for a fact he also had your entire storyline plotted out and ready.
Yeah, he did. And that's going to be, I can't wait to see that scene. That's going to be an amazing scene with Courtney and Dad. Sam, is it? Sam? I think his name was Sam.
Sam Curtis.
Yeah. That's going to be such a beautiful scene. I mean,
it's, you know, kind of an episode full of heartbreak.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. It's so sad because she's so hoping that he is Starman and that he is good and to be... You know, I hate to see children disappointed by their parents. It's so heartbreaking when they're willing to gamble everything again. You know, it's like you've lost your house, but you're going to put it all on again because you want it to work out. You want it to happen. And I know that's going to be just a beautiful, heart-wrenching scene. And the fact that Pat is there at the end just kind of, you know, really... You know, there's really, they've been coming together throughout the whole show, but at this point, I feel like this is the moment where it is going to work between them. You know.
Oh yeah, when she goes and hugs him, I teared up reading the script.
Yeah, same.
But you know, you've got that heartbreak, but also when you see just how fragmented Justin is and how he's trying to find himself, that also is very heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's almost a mirror image of what Courtney's going through in this episode.
It is.
She's beginning to doubt herself and he's beginning to find himself.
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's beautiful the way that it coalesces the two, you know. It's
symmetry.
Symmetry, that's it. Symmetry. Yeah, it's beautiful. Very, very well written show. I'm I was very, very impressed with how, you know, as the script was coming in, how it was reading, and how exciting, and you know, I love the use of music in there too, the way that it brought that in.
Justin is a character that goes back to, I believe, 1941. He's been around a really long time. Did that make your research process more difficult to find? Because obviously in 80 years, a character is going to change and evolve.
Yeah. Yes, it definitely did. You know, I that was part of the research that I did too, was just kind of finding out what I could. And, you know, I did kind of piece a little bit together. After I had booked it, I looked up on I did a Google search, I guess. It was Justin DC, and it came up Sir Justin. And I was reading the Wikipedia on everything, and just kind of finding out his history, and what a history it is. I mean, to go back to 1941 as being the first penned comic, I mean, all the history throughout the comics of who he is and where he's been in his life, it kind of blew me away. You know, get to talk about it a little bit now, but to be a time-traveling knight from the era of the Round Table, who managed to save Merlin from a tree, who blessed his sword and his armor and gave his horse wings, turned it into a Pegasus, to being frozen, to being stuck in time, to helping be the bodyguard of Churchill in World War II, fighting alongside Genghis Khan. It really, I mean,
it's like a grab bag of all 15th century literature crammed into one character.
Yeah, it is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm just so grateful that there are people in the world that can and do write these absolute pearlers. It's amazing, right? So yeah, that was a great place for me to start, right?
And I feel like this incarnation of him is sort of a whole new take. I haven't seen a story where he's got this sort of broken mind, yeah, and this Quixote nature like this before.
Yeah, I wonder if that was from the Seven Soldiers of Victory when he got rescued.
It could be. He's been in so many comics and so many incarnations. It's really hard to keep track of every storyline.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. I think while we've been talking, I've heard sounds like a little girl.
Yes, that would be my little girl. She's running around here somewhere. Yeah. I'm quarantini. So, Quarantito.
The reason I bring it up is she of an age that she can be super excited that her daddy's going to be on Stargirl?
Well, she knows I'm on Stargirl. She was able to come down to set, and she got to see Stripe, and she knew that I was going to work every day, and she will say that she knows it, but she's excited, but she's not going to be excited to watch. She's not going to be watching it. She isn't, because I think it's just a little bit too far out for where she is at the moment. She's about to be six, and we've been really, really mindful of what goes in,
right?
You know, as far as entertainment and how she's plugged in. She doesn't have any kind of little phones or Mac, you know, little tablets, whatever they use.
There's quite a bit of violence and death for a five-year-old.
There is. And, you know, I feel like it's this show, I feel like it's geared more toward adolescence, possibly, on up. You know, I feel like I'm sure some 12, 13-year-olds will be able to watch it, depending on how they're brought up too, you know, and I'm not judging it by any means. It's just kind of what we've chosen to do for her. And, right. So we started watching a little bit last year. We watched E.T., earlier this year, and that was, it left an amazing thing in its wake. She was drawing E.T. At first she didn't like it. She was conflicted with her feelings, you know, when E.T. Went missing, when he was trying to call home and he was found down in the woods and he was very, very sick, and the doctors, the way that they came in, it's very, very dark. I mean, I remember that moment when I was a child, and you know, in retrospect, we probably should have waited another year or two to watch that with her. But just because she doesn't know how to process those feelings yet, you know.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you brought up that movie of all movies, because that was, in fact, the first movie I ever saw.
Oh, awesome.
I saw it when I was three. I saw it. I made my mom take me back four times to see it in the theater.
That is amazing. At 3 years old, you remember going back. Amazing show.
My key memory of that is every time the ship would take off and leave the rainbow, I would cry.
Yeah.
Like in happiness. And then to go to set and be at lunch and sitting at the next table was Henry.
Yeah.
You can be sure. I walked over and I was like, hey, I want you to know you are in a very real way a big part of why I'm here on a movie set today.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Gosh, that's awesome, Sean.
So I definitely relate with your daughter's conflicted feelings on E.T., and I think that it was a fantastic first movie for you to choose for her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely something that she will forever remember. You know, she sometimes should be playing with the dolls, and I can hear her humming the sound. You know, and it's such a beautiful film. It's just really, really well done. The way that we connect with that's another thing too. Looking for a connection, you know, in the movies, so how we want to connect and we want to pull. It was amazing how they shot the adults pretty much from the knee down,
right,
throughout the movie, except the mother, who was kind of a kid herself, and she was going through relationship issues. And
her and Peter Coyote, I think, are the only ones whose faces you really see.
Peter Coyote, yeah, he reminds me of Matthew Modine a little bit.
I don't want to inflate your ego here, but as I've spoken to other cast members, both in these interviews and back when we were shooting, many of them bring you up, and every time they do, they have just such wonder and excitement in their voices. Like, oh my God, Mark is so great.
Oh man, Sean, thank you, man. That's amazing. That's so, everybody was just... Yeah, it was a dream, and everybody was so open and so present, and so I loved meeting everybody, and they were all so cool. Man, they're all so cool. Yeah, that's so nice. That's just made my rest of the year.
Yeah, you've really made an impression, particularly on the younger actors. Jake, for example, he was so, so impressed with you and your talent. And I believe Cameron brought you
Cameron's
up as well.
Awesome. Me and Cameron connected. Yeah. We still text and phone every once in a while. Angelica and Brett was just a sweet, sweetheart. Meg and,
they're all super, super nice people. And I haven't worked with a better cast ever. Like I love all these people.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really fantastic. There's, you know, it's a great, great series. And there's going to be so many different things for people to connect to, you know, and there's going to be tears. I think there's going to be heartbreak, you know, in any story with good and evil, there are losses incurred along the way on both sides. And, you know, it's one of those things. I think these kids are going to just bring the connections that people are really going to feel and spill tears over.
Now, I have one question I'm asking all the cast members, so I want to get your take on this.
Okay.
If you were offered a role in Stargirl and you could pick whatever role you wanted other than Justin, who would you have wanted to play?
Gosh, that's a really good question. At first, my mind went to Pat. You know, but then that would change the whole. That would change the whole script around, and I wouldn't want to do that. I think possibly Brainwave.
That is the most popular answer.
Yeah,
I can't wait to talk to Chris about it.
Yeah, I think possibly Brainwave, because that's, you know, I mean, I'm glad you said it, away from Justin, because I couldn't picture, you know, I wouldn't want to picture myself in anybody else but Justin. Yeah, Christopher was amazing. Oh, he's so good. Such a nice fella too. And Neil Jackson, he was great. Did you follow him on Instagram?
Yeah.
Oh, he's great, man. He's so good. I mean, he's just his cold shower routines and his vulnerability, you know, with awareness on so many different subjects. He is a gem.
Really, everyone is. I also have to say, when I asked this question of everybody, almost everybody had sort of like you did, you know, sort of two answers.
Yeah.
Except Jake. Jake had no hesitation, knew exactly who he was interested in. He said, Shining Knight.
Did he? Awesome.
And I had to edit it out of his interview because his interview's in episode 10. So there'll be an uncut version later where people can hear his answer. But it's going to have to be a mystery until after the season's over.
It'd be a great Shining Knight, too. I would.
Again, everybody on this show was amazing.
Yeah.
And not the least of which you, sir.
Oh, cheers, mate. I enjoyed meeting everybody on the show. And it goes to you and to the people that were out there catering. And making just amazing meals. They were so nice and so open and so, you know, them guys work hard. Oh, hard. They're there when you get there. They work all day and into the night. And, you know, the costume department and the makeup and hair, Essie was just, I mean, they're all just, I think, it was a beautiful family. Beautiful family. It's funny. I remember we were working on the pilot, and I think it was Glenn Winter that did the first. That,
yep.
Glenn, we were getting ready to do a scene that I think has been moved.
The closet where you reveal the sword.
Exactly. When we were getting ready to do that scene, and it was the first time on camera on the show, he's like, "Okay, here we go. Let's shoot this real quick." Justin Arthur, Justin the janitor, who is inevitably going to have his own spin-off show. It was a funny comment, but you know, Glenn maybe didn't know where the character was going, but. You know, just for him to have said that based on a janitor pulling a sword out in his work closet, you know. Oh, here we go, the inevitable spin-off character. funny.
I think they were trying to set up a lot more in the pilot.
Yeah.
And just didn't have the running time. To, you know, it would have ended up being a 90-minute episode the way it was written.
the way that it's shot too is just beautiful, isn't it? Production value of it.
It's beautiful.
I remember there's a scene, I think it's in 7, where the cosmic staff was in front of me, and it was a broom that I dropped, and then it rises up, and I pick it up.
That's episode 9.
Episode 9. I remember the director of that episode, she came into the restaurant that I was working, and I hadn't got the script yet, and I had some friends that were over there, some regulars at the restaurant. I work at my friend's restaurant every now and again, and they called me over and said, "Margo, this lady's in town working in film." I was like, "Oh, cool, that's so cute." When the regulars, you know, they want to try, because you know we might have things to talk about. You know, they're mediators. So I went over there, and I noticed it said Stargo on it, and it was something that I saw right away. I said, "Oh, you want Stargirl?" She said, "Yeah, I'm directing episode 9. I said, "Really?" I said, I'm on the show. And she said, "What's your character?" I'm playing Justin Janitor. And she said, "Oh," she says, "you're in this scene sweeping." And then the cosmic staff comes up and, "Yeah, you're in this episode." I was like, "Sweet." I hadn't gotten the episode yet. So I didn't know that was even in it. Which is pretty amazing. Yeah. What was I saying before about the staff? Oh, the production value. Yeah. So, he was letting me know that this is lighting up, and Jeff came onto set that day, and he pulled out his laptop, and he opened it up, and it was the scene from the pilot episode where Courtney finds it, and he's making these little humming sounds, and you know, he was just letting me use that you know, to connect with the cosmic staff. And I was really watching it, and I couldn't get past how just amazing everything looked. And this was like, I mean, this was like 2 months after we'd even shot that. And I was blown away by the production value of it all. It's like every single episode is going to be like a movie. You know, and it doesn't look like television. It looks like movie. Every single one.
Mark, I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time today.
Yeah.
This character is fantastic, and I'm so happy to see him brought to life by such an accomplished actor.
Thank you, my friend. I'm so grateful to have been given the trust and the opportunity to bring him to the screen, and I'm thrilled with how Sir Justin is wielding his sword presently, and. Yeah, a big shout out to Ben Akrig, who did my sword work mostly. I mean, we did it, and he rehearsed me, and the stunt coordinator, Walter, it was amazing. But Ben Akrig, who is one of the stunt guys, he's one of the knights at the, what's that place here in town?
Medieval Times?
Medieval Times, yeah. And he was the one that's probably going to make me look better at the sword than I did, and Reese Fleetwood too, who was my stand-in stunt guy. Them guys were just amazing, and I'd like to thank them for doing what they do. They're gold.
Well, thanks again, Mark, for talking to us, and you have a wonderful day.
And you too, brother. I'll see you soon.
Stargirl After Show.
Sarah, what'd you think?
He is such an inspiration. Like, with everything that he's done, I want to make my own vision board and see if I can be half as successful as him.
Right? Like, and it's really inspiring the way he just talks about how he's just, like, gone about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and just, you make a goal and you go for that goal. Gotta listen to your instincts. See what leads you. Yeah.
Yeah, because of all the actors' stories and how they got into acting, his was the most, I don't know, working class.
Yeah.
Everyone else, it's like these aspirations and like the typical Hollywood grind that you think of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were all doing it from LA.
Yeah.
And he's here in Atlanta, and he just was like, I'm going to go learn this craft because it seems interesting, and I'm just going to plug away and become this amazing actor with this gigantic, gigantic IMDb page.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done amazing. I can't wait to see him in more.
For sure. And again, really hope he's back for season two. I have no clue if he will be. But he lives here. They don't even have to fly him in. He could probably ride a bike to be on the show if he wanted. Or a horse. So yeah.
That would be the most amazing entrance ever. If he just rode a horse to set.
Man, what if it actually like plays out exactly the way I just said though, before the break?
Mm-hmm.
And then I get in trouble for predicting it. Nah.
Yeah, that would be awkward. But I still hope it happens.
So Sarah, tell the nice people on the internet where they can find you on the internet.
If you watch the CW show Nancy Drew and are just as excited for season two as I am, you should go over to What's New Nancy Drew and listen to my co-host Ben and I as we talk about the show and the mysteries and everything about it. And Sean, where else can we hear you?
Well, I have another podcast called Table Reads, which you can find at tablereadspodcast.com. It is quite funny, if I do say so myself. And I have to, because no one else is. it's currently on hiatus, but there are 135, I think, very fun episodes that you can go back and listen to at tablereadspodcast.com.
Excellent. And if you want to find us on the socials, you can find us Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at StargirlPod. You can also go to our website, Stargirl After Show Podcast. No.
Stargirl After Show.
StargirlAfterShow.com. And, you know, get all the episodes and all the information there.
I tell you what, though, I would have done StargirlAfterShowPodcast.com, except that is just way too long.
That is really long.
I mean, I would forget what website I was going to in the middle of typing that out and just end up on Amazon.
Yeah. That's where I usually end up anyways.
And there's $200 gone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Damn you, Amazon. So that's it for us this week. Next week, you guys. Next week is our longest interview ever. We talk to supersuit designer to the stars, Laura Jean Shannon, and she is a chatterbox, and I love it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear everything.
So much information. So come back for that. If you have any interest in superhero suits, or if you're a cosplayer, maybe, you're not going to want to miss this. That's it for us. We'll see you next week. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.